When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I didn't necessarily want to focus on the public. I wanted to focus on the people that were closest to me. But I was aware of other people may look up to me. And it was this, how would they feel if they see me having starting a family with a woman who doesn't who's white?
Yep.
And we literally sat there and I said, I told her, that concerns me.
That's good.
Because I don't want them to feel less. I don't want my niece to ask the question, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
That, I don't know if I could curse, but that, it hurts.
Yeah.
The thought of that. If I could see my one of my nieces asking that question. Because I love them unconditionally.
Yeah.
I think they are so beautiful. And I want to do everything to bring out that beauty. Mm. And I still will. And so that was the impetus of the conversation that happened back in January.
We put porn to shame.
Womb isn't just about where I give
talk
birth to
about
babies.
It. Talk.
The womb is about where we give birth to purpose.
Talk.
I was basically all of her nevers.
I never imagined my journey would inspire people all over the world.
You have set a standard in love.
I was dating a young lady who helped me heal.
Wow. This woman is a ride or die.
The conversations have really helped me to change my perspective on relationships.
I had 19 attorneys at one time that were speaking into my ear.
19 attorneys.
My last relationship, you know, it did a number on me.
What you did not know is I had a whole little situation lined up that evening.
Your transparency is literally setting people free.
And you're unique. You ain't like nobody else. I noticed that right away.
You're gonna make me cry. thank you. I receive that.
Let one of them Barbie doll bodies walk up here. He's gonna say, dear future wifey. You know what I'm saying? They're gonna go right in that box.
I'm Leteris R. Whitfield, and welcome to the Dear Future Wifey Podcast.
Welcome to the Dear Future Wifey Podcast. I'm your host, Leteris R. Whitfield. Listen, are you still shacking up with us? If you're still shacking up with us, come on, we're in season 5. Can we make a commitment and subscribe? We're on the road to reach 100,000 subscribers, and we're about 6,500 shy. So come on, let's do your part, share the podcast, and tell everybody to subscribe. If you're listening to us on streaming platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you consume your audio podcasts, then leave a review. Give us 4 or 5 stars, and depending on what the platform requires, and so we can spread the word. On this personal journey, as I discover, uncover, and recover love, I'm always addressing my own idiosyncrasies and my own biases. I'm making sure that I don't duplicate the same mistakes that I made in the past in choosing my purpose partner in the future. And so after having this organic conversation while I was out working on the project, I met this amazing gentleman who I'm going to introduce y'all to in a second. Listen, without further ado, welcome to the Dear Future Wifey Podcast, my new homies, Siku, Lewis, and Maddie Steger. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
So, you said say cool. I say Siku, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, say cool. Sega Genesis. I was going to remember. Say cool. So I apologize for that. So say cool, Lewis. Say cool. So I was working on a project. I interviewed you to give a tribute to Cent Marshall for UNCF, for the United Negro College Fund, for their gala. And you were just excited about your upcoming wedding.
Yeah.
And then I said, you said, oh, yeah, I'm about to get married. And I get excited when I hear a man get excited about, see, you know that, Maddie, he was all excited and stuff about it. And then I said, so what made you marry this particular individual? And what did you say?
She brings me peace.
She brings me peace. And I said, wow, this is amazing. Then I said, and then we started talking about some other stuff, and we talked about legacy and all this amazing stuff that has transpired. You talked about how solid she is as a Christian woman. And did you know he values those things in you? You didn't know that?
No. I mean, I had a feeling, but I've never heard him say it out loud.
You never heard him say it?
Or to anyone else, because he's so private.
See? And see, he's sharing this stuff with me. So I was like, wow. So then what I did, Maddie, is I went on the internet and I Googled. I said, okay, let me pull up Sekou. And it popped up your picture. And then I said, Now, the excitement that I had now transferred into a bias, because I'm like, okay, he's marrying a white woman. Mm-hmm. And then I said, now, Laterris, deal with that. Now, how do you feel? Yeah. How were you at first excited about it? Then you, by just seeing the color of her skin, now you're like, ah, is he one of them? Is he one of these type of guys? Yeah. And I was like, all right, God, because I'm a Christian man. I said, all right, I want to talk to him one day and ask, without judging him and his preference or his decision to marry this amazing woman, let me get his story. So organically, he ended up calling me about this other project. And I said, I got to ask you something, brother. And I asked him this question. I said, what made you marry her? And I told him the backstory about what I had looked at and Google. And I said, so tell me why you married her. This episode is titled The Color of Love. So, Sekou, what did you say?
Well, it wasn't hard to pick Maddie. That wasn't the hard part. It wasn't her. It was everything else that surrounded her and us.
Right.
And you and I talked about this. The example I gave was, you know, I was raised, I have four older sisters and my mother. So there's five women in the household. I have a younger brother, thank God for him, and my father. And then I have aunts.
Yes.
My mother's sisters. And they're all eight of them are beautiful, amazing, strong women who are well accomplished, smart. They're the leaders of the family. Our grandmother, she, you know, my grandfather passed away. So our grandmother was a matriarch of the family. She was brilliant. So I grew up with strong black women leading me. Right. And they are responsible for a large part of who I am today. Still to this day, in the toughest decisions that I make in life, I call them usually first.
Yeah.
Right. Because I have a high value of respect. I look up to them, not physically, I'm taller than them, but in every other aspect. But so when this relationship came about, I have a strong love for them. So everyone that looks like them and me. And when Maddie came up, I had to think about it. Not Maddie, but I hear it as I love this woman unconditionally.
Right.
No filter. But I think about my nieces, my sisters, my cousins. How would they feel knowing that the woman I chose to be with for the rest of my life didn't look like them? Right. Regardless if she was white, even if she was Hispanic or Asian or something, any other, that they didn't look like them.
Right.
And I thought in particular about my younger nieces, because I wondered, I really thought about this hard, and actually Maddie and I had this conversation early on in our relationship.
That's good.
I brought this up. I said, this is a concern of mine.
That's good.
And I said, my younger nieces, I wanted them to know that regardless of who I choose to be with, I still love you. You are beautiful. You are strong. I will stand by you. I will stand behind you. And when the time is needed, I will stand in front of you.
Ooh.
Ooh. And so I had to do a lot of deep soul searching.
Yeah.
And really understand like what love meant to me.
Yes.
And so I had conversations with those important women I talked about in my life. I had conversations with very close friends. And at times they set me straight.
Hmm.
I thought they were going to co-sign on the biases that not necessarily I had, but what I thought society might have around us. And they set me straight. And so after that, after realize what my heart felt, well, where my spirit was moving, and where the people that actually cared about me and knew me, where they were all pointing to me, it was left to say to myself, well, what are you waiting for?
There it is. And see, I don't have a problem with who people choose to love. I just don't like it when someone chooses to love someone outside their race to the demise of their own race. If they go, all black women are this, all black women are loud, I don't like black women, they too this, 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 so I'm going to go over and marry someone of a different ethnicity. Then I go, okay, now that's a little self-hate, because now you're generalizing a whole demographic of people, and that demographic is you, but you're saying all black women are this. So after I heard you say what you said to me, I was like, bruh, like, what's up? Can I come to the wedding? Like, because at the end of the day, love wins. And that's all I care about. I care about people making holistic decisions based upon the convictions of their heart, making sure that they actually look at, and you did an inventory, to a self-inventory to say, okay, now how do I feel about this? And you would have prevented yourself based upon what you feel society looks at and judge and all that type of stuff. And you would have had, which would have been sad, is that you would have foregone the love of your life just because what other people may think. And it don't matter what nobody else thinks, but it's great that you had a support system that rallied behind you and checked you on your own heart. Maddie, how have you dealt with that? Like, how did your family respond to it?
Well, my family loves him more than they love me sometimes. Because when he says that I bring him peace, he has been the most peaceful blanket I've ever experienced in my life. I grew up in a very anxious household. We had alcoholics in my family. It was a lot of uneasiness, I'm the older sibling, I'm the older sister, there's two of us. And so I grew up kind of being like a second mom, wanting to take care of her and make sure she's okay. And I also had, in my 20s, I had really crappy relationships. And my family has always wanted the best for me. And when my dad first met Seiku, so my dad is a very quiet person. He's a man of very little words. He has never said anything about any other boyfriends I've ever had. He just doesn't have any interest in taking part in any of them.
Getting to know him or nothing.
Nope. Doesn't really care. And I know why now, because he saw straight through him.
That's what I was about to say.
He was like, this guy, he's not
very
sticking
temporary.
Around.
Very. Yeah, he's like, I ain't finna get my heart involved. I don't want to know
I'm not going to waste my time.
No, not at all.
Absolutely not. Well, after my mom had met Seiku, he reached out to me and he was like, I am coming to Dallas. He was coming in town for a conference. And he said, I want to meet him. And I was like, okay. So we arranged for a breakfast meeting. I'm like, breakfast sounds safe, right?
Yeah,
I feel like we
safe.
can get in and out and just do a breakfast thing. And so Seiku comes to meet him before he goes to work. So of course he comes in a suit and I'm just like, oh God. And my dad, he wears like, I don't know, like cargo, like military pants. And
he came in with a suit this time?
No. My dad didn't wear a suit. Seiku was in a suit.
Oh, Seiku had a suit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my dad was in his like normal relaxed clothes. And so we get to talking and my dad loves hunting. He's into like guns and knives and all the things, right?
Things that make Seiku real scared.
Right. Well, actually, no. That's the thing. Not at all. Like, that's like they bonded over that. So the whole time at breakfast, I'm like,
I'm still here.
Like, I didn't even get a word in. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, seriously, God? Like, really? Like, this is it. This is the one that my dad chooses to. And when I say my dad doesn't have an opinion, like he has never said anything. Like he doesn't say like that guy's trash or
he says
I don't
nothing.
Care. He says
like they don't exist.
Exactly. So after breakfast and Seiku leaves and my dad gives me a hug and I didn't grow up super close to my dad. He traveled a lot for work. As I've gotten older, I've gotten closer with my dad. But during that time, it was like we were trying to form a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So he hugged me really tight and he looked at me, he grabbed both of my hands and he goes, Maddie, I really, really like that man.
Wow.
And I just went, what? I was speechless for a good like minute. I didn't really know what to say. I just kind of got teary eyed and hands
How long
got
had
sweaty.
Y'all been dating during that time?
What, that was January? So
a
it was
few months.
Yeah, a few months. Yeah. And so to answer your question, how does my family feel about him?
They like him more than they like you.
Yes. Long story short, Yes, absolutely. My mom adores him. My dad loves him. My sister loves him. My grandparents love him. Everyone just loves him.
I asked him this question, and I don't know if he ever told you this, but I said, I love to hear how soon a man knows when that's the one for them, that that's the woman, that's the person, that's their wife. Seiko, you remember what you said?
I remember pieces of it. I remember pieces of it.
How long did it take you to know that this is the one?
It didn't take long at all.
Quantify it by time, roughly.
Probably, I would say spring 2020.
So from the time you met and the time that happened, how many months was that?
Would have been six.
Yep.
About 6 months.
As we said, about the first 6 months. I say that most men know, they get a feeling early on, but they actually say, this is it. They make a decision within the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that's what I just found from a lot of guys. A lot of guys be like, in the first couple of weeks, I knew this was the one, but it may take a while for them to actually give themselves freely to
it's
that.
It's a vetting process.
Yeah.
You got to check your feelings. Like, hold on, man.
You're like, hold on now. I can't be getting all caught up like this. Yeah. She may be trying to slick me right now. Yeah. I got to keep my gangster a little while longer. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they fight that emotion for as long as possible. Then they go, all right, that's the one. All right, I'm at a daddy now. Okay, he like me. Okay, I can't be that dude. I can't be the dude that's playing and fumbling around with our heart. And what he said in that was so powerful. Unpack that. When you said originally that she was a place of peace, what did you mean by that?
So, a few things. I've been in past relationships that were like roller coasters. I had a friend, a close friend. We were like, we've been friends since we were high school. And he jokingly was like, I'm not hanging around you guys. It's like World War III. That's right. And so I was just, it was shocking because, you know, when you're in a relationship, especially if it's normal.
Yeah.
If the volatility is normal.
Yeah.
You don't see it as drastically as somebody from the outside looking in. And he's a straight shooter with me. That's kind of relationship we call like it is. So when he said that, I was like, whoa, I had to take a step back too. Like, this is, if a good friend of mine is telling me this is what it's like, I don't know if this is like the best thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so when I thought about my connection with Maddie, immediately it was, I felt, well, one, I actually, let's take a step back. I was in a place of peace, right, as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a good state.
That's good. That's powerful. So I want people to catch that.
And I was willing to accept a person for where they were.
There it is.
I wasn't going to try to force anyone. And I was very intentional, but I wasn't going to try to force anyone to be where I needed them to be. Look, this is where I am. I want to know where you are. And if you're not there, I respect it. And we'll just figure out the best thing for us. That we talked about this early on. And she was at a state where she was in a similar place.
Good.
And we had like real honest conversations about a lot of things, a lot of take it or leave it moments early on. And the fact that I could have that level of like risk on the table with somebody.
Yeah.
And still come up with a winning hand.
Mm.
It made me feel like, okay, I'm good. And even my indecisiveness at times didn't rattle her, right? And so I accepted that. That gave me more comfort that, okay, because I know life throws a lot at you. Life is very consistent at being inconsistent with something.
Yes.
And you need somebody that can be able to move with you in times of uncertainty, in times of difficult times, and even good times, not get overly excited.
Yes.
And she was willing and she was able to move with me, but also let me move through it on my own.
That's good.
And that was the piece I needed because, you know, we're all unique individuals and I have varying interests that don't always make sense when you look at me. That has nothing to do with the woman I'm getting ready to marry. But I'm talking about just like I'm a very eclectic mind. The music I like, the activities I like to participate in for exercise, like martial arts or something like that, right? I'm very intellectually curious, so my mind can shift. That can scare people.
Yeah.
Because it's like yesterday you had long hair, now you got short hair. What's up?
Who are you, man?
Who are you? And next thing you know, and for a woman, security is very important.
Yes.
And inconsistency is the opposite of security.
100%.
So I like to say my mind is curious.
Instead of inconsistent.
And she's okay. She's more comfortable with that, allowing me to be me. And so that brings me peace. And by that bringing me peace, I can give her more.
Yeah. Maddie, what do you think when you hear him saying what he's saying?
Oh, he's spot on. I think the most important piece to everything that he's saying, when I hear him talk about how he was moving through and trying to navigate everything, if we had gone back in time and I was Maddie a year and a half prior and I had met him, but absolutely not. Because I wasn't at peace with myself. I was insecure. I wasn't stable. Good. I didn't like my job. I didn't feel comfortable with myself. I didn't know who I was as a person. I was still trying to figure myself out. And
stop right there.
Okay.
People got to hear that. I'm trying to tell you, because a lot of people are they feel like they're deserving of love to the degree of marriage. Sure. They're like, I'm supposed to be a wife. But how can you be a wife when you don't even know who you are?
Yeah.
The Bible says, he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. You have to be a wife already in order to be found. People feel like the wife is after the nuptials. That's what happens at the ceremony. No, a wife exists. That's why I say he who finds a wife. And so you just said this place of peace, this place of understanding who you are. And the minute you understood who you are, that's how you could be found. And he could see who you are. I always say, it's this quote that God gave me last year that said, men should pursue and not persuade, and a woman should present and not pursue. So a woman should just present. I'm whole. He'll see that. He'll go, okay, this is different.
Yeah.
This is different from what I've been through in the past. This other part seemed a little chaotic. This other woman I dated or relationships in the past, like you said, was a little toxic. And now I see this wholeness. We're meeting each other in this place of wholeness. Now we can truly see each other for who we are. That's what's so beautiful in this. Continue, Maddie.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most important piece to the whole puzzle of us, is that I know we were both in a place of, this is who we are. And we were so incredibly vulnerable with each other from the jump.
That's what he told me. I want you to explain that. Cause he said this and I said, I get emotional when I think about that, because vulnerability and you cannot have a healthy marriage, a healthy relationship, a healthy parenting relationship with your kids if you won't be transparent and vulnerable. Right. But I want you to unpack that.
Well, I'll go back to how I was raised. And if my mom and dad listen to this, no offense, you all know this. There was secrets in the house, and a lot of things were kept swept under the rug. Nothing was addressed. We didn't have the tough conversations. They seemed like they just didn't want to talk about it because it was too tough to talk about.
Right.
And I knew that as an adult, I could not and did not want to live that way. So when I met him and we started talking about the hard things, I mean, we talked about, like he said, we talked about interracial relationships at the very beginning.
Good.
Before the pandemic and before it was cool to talk about.
Yeah.
We had that tough conversation. It was like a 3-hour long conversation. It's tough. It's hard.
Yeah.
We both felt like, okay, I'm going to go to sleep now. Like, I literally just laid my whole life out on the table. But yeah, being vulnerable with someone is so hard, but it is so incredibly important. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I still have my quirks. I still have my anxious moments where I get insecure and I feel too vulnerable. You know, I'm human. But from the beginning, and us being so open with each other has just set the tone for who we are as a couple going forward. And it's been, I don't even know the word. It's just a blessing, to be honest with you.
That's,
it's like
word,
something I've never experienced in my life.
I asked Sekou, I said, Sekou, I asked him, I said, listen, how did you know this is the one for you? He said, when I was able to have conversations with her, expecting her to leave, but she never would go. He said, when I was able to have conversations with her, expecting her to leave, but she never would go. And I was like, I want to run around that Mavericks headquarters. When he said that, you know, first of all, Sekou is the bomb. He's an intelligent dude. He's a general counsel for the Dallas Mavericks. He's bomb, young, brilliant mind. Mm-hmm. And so I was about to run around the headquarters. I was like, yes, because we're so afraid to have those conversations. Yeah. He said, I'm gonna be honest with you. Certain stuff, I said, I'm going to just drop this on her. And
see what happens.
And she's going to leave. He said, and I would say it, and then she would still be there. And we would go closer. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I need people to hear that. He said, I would have these conversations with her, and it would draw us closer. Well, that's an undeniable. That's why when that happens, it doesn't matter what the world say. You can pass by people on the street, and they can look at you with judgmental eyes and discriminatory looks. You be like, we got this. We solid over here. I hope y'all get what we got right here. You know what I'm saying? It becomes a moment of when the Bible says that we become one flesh, that we will cleave to one another. Then that's what's happening even before the I do's, is that y'all are cleaving to one another because y'all are allowing each other to go into spaces in each other's hearts that have never been inhabited by other people. That no other man that you've ever dealt with has been an inhabitant of that place in your heart, and vice versa for my brother over here. It's so when you have this cleaving, this moment that happens spiritually and emotionally and psychologically and physically, then you're able to say, I love you. And you're able to say those beautiful nuptials and be able to mean it from the core of your soul because you did the work. Unfortunately, people walk down the aisle, they say these beautiful vows, they spend all this money on the accoutrements of a wedding, but then they don't really know each other.
Right.
But when y'all had those tough conversations early on, what made you be willing to have those conversations? She, at the very beginning, she made the comment of, he really doesn't talk much. But then the more I'm hearing unpacking that you may not talk much, but when you talk, you say some stuff like a dad. Like when it's time to talk, I'm going to talk about what needs to be addressed.
Exactly.
What made you decide to challenge your relationship with the truth?
It was a journey. It was a journey. It was a journey within myself first, the truth, my own truth. There was a lot that went into this. There was a lot of tragedy in my family prior to Maddie and I really making that bond. And it really allowed me to get a perspective on life and love.
Yes.
And what the value of it is. Jay-Z has a great line. He says, people know the price of a lot, but the value of nothing.
Mm.
That was paraphrased, not quoted. but I learned the value of love. And I also learned, in order to have it within yourself, you have to be honest. You have to be vulnerable. In order to be able to bring it to a relationship, you have to be yourself or your old self. But I said this at my brother's wedding. He asked me to do an impromptu speech. But it's kind of, I've got some themes in life that I try to carry on, and I wear them or I speak them. But I told him in the speech, I said, you have to be brave in love. You have to be brave and courageous when you step into that arena of love. If, I grew up playing basketball, so competitive. I'm a competitive person by nature, not overly competitive, but I like to compete.
Yeah.
And I know when you step onto that court, you step into that arena, you step onto that field, in order to win, you've got to take risk. And with every risk that you take, you have to be vulnerable, accepting that you might not win. You might not make the shot. You might not score the goal, especially if it's a martial art. You might get hit upside the head. And love is brutal like that.
Yes.
You can get hit upside the head. But the only way you're going to win is if you take that risk, is if you're brave. You stand there right in front of your own fears, your own vulnerabilities, and you put them out there, and you see what comes back. And you're also accepting of the truth, that if you put it out there, she might not like it. She might laugh at you. Right. She may say, no, I'm cool, bro. Or she may actually say, I get that. Let me take a few steps further with you. And so by taking that risk, being brave in love, that was what I came with. I was willing to do that work. I was willing to be that guy. I didn't see it as a weakness, being vulnerable, because like I said, if I'm looking at the field or the competitive field, just take combat sport, for example. You have to have bravery to step into there, even if you get knocked out. Most people won't step into there. So just like love, if you want to be that champ, you want to win, you have to be brave in that arena and step out there and be willing to get knocked out or be the victor.
You and I talked about writing your vows, then you kind of just wrote them right then.
They wrote themselves. Like, right there. And we have it recorded. We can just get the transcription and we're done.
Tighten it up. So Maddie, when you hear him speak about you, especially to someone else, and a stranger initially, hearing how he spoke about you without you being in the room, how does that make you feel?
Incredible. And he doesn't, I mean, I think this is the first time that I have heard him speak about me to someone else while I've been around.
Yeah.
Because he's a private person. He doesn't share a whole lot. And it's not just because of who I am or our relationship. It's just, he doesn't share anything about his life. Yeah. He's just private.
It's that attorney-client privilege.
Yeah, exactly.
Attorney-client privilege.
But really though. So to hear it, I mean, I already know how he feels about me because I feel it.
Right.
It's the way he treats me, the way he speaks to me, the way I just move about in life, the way we interact with each other, even without words, just the way that we are with each other. So I feel it. But to hear it is a whole nother just level of,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
It's just confirmation.
Confirmation.
You know, and women like confirmation.
100%.
You know, and my love language is words of affirmation. So it's just, you're watering my plant right now. That's how it feels.
Yeah. Man, let me tell you something. That's what's so dope. And that's what made me say, I got to talk to this couple because I didn't know you. So I was like, I got to see who he loves. You know what I'm saying? Because when a guy, I'm telling you, men, we have this, I call it toxic masculinity, where we are not taught to speak highly of the women that we love.
Sure.
It's the craziest thing. It's like, well, why'd you marry in the first place if you can't say anything good about it? Be like, you know, I mean, she, you know, she wanted to get married. You know what I'm saying? It just is what it is.
Yes.
Like that's like, no, why can't you say my woman is amazing? Yeah. When I first met her, when I set eyes on her, I knew she was the one. I love this woman. She does this. You know, people are like, for real? You know, why can't it be that? That's what I want to make popular is where we can actually affirm our women, love on them, use words of affirmation. If that's not their love language and their love language is gifts, why'd you give me money when I need? So you go ahead and go that route and love her with gifts or whatnot. But whatever, meet our spouses, our significant others in the way that they receive love instead of withholding it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's a beautiful song. That's a worship song, but I like to liken it to a relationship by William Murphy that says withholding nothing, you know, and the song is I'm withholding nothing. That's how I want my marriage to be, is where I'm withholding nothing, that my wife has everything. And when he said that I was willing to share with her things I have never shared with anybody else, but expecting them to leave, because the main thing is we're vulnerable enough to say, I know this is the right thing to do, but I'm putting myself out there and this could hurt. Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and premeditate the pain. I'm going to say, well, I expect to leave anyway. And then you stay, and it's like, oh, uh-oh.
Okay.
Well, okay, she's still here. I'm going to give a little bit more, and then give a little bit more. And then you have this beautiful dance that happens between the two of you where y'all hearts begin to dance and intertwine. And now y'all have this beautiful thing called a covenant that y'all are about to take in the next couple of weeks. That right there just blessed me. Anyway, so,
same.
So listen. So as you, what made you willing to, both of y'all, I want y'all to answer this question. What made y'all willing to do this interview?
You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. Well, he had mentioned to me, he's mentioned, you should do a podcast. And I'm like, I just don't have the bandwidth right now with just my work schedule and planning a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And also just health stuff. So I'm more tired than normal sometimes. So when he said, we have the opportunity to go on a podcast, I was like, well, this is interesting. Tell me more. But he didn't tell me a whole lot, you know, which is super on brand for Sekou. It's kind of like just a little crumb. Here's a little crumb.
He said, just come on there.
Uh-huh. So when I sat down today, this is the first time me hearing about what this was about, but listen, I know him as a man, and he wouldn't put me in a situation that I couldn't handle.
There it is.
You know, and God wouldn't put me in a situation that I couldn't handle.
There it is.
And again, I'm comfortable with who I am. I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable. So it is what it is, right?
I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable.
I am. I have to. I mean,
why you say you have to?
Well, because of who, first of all, my job. So I have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
What do you do?
Soul cycle instructor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because of being in an interracial relationship, being uncomfortable comes more often than not with comments and looks from people. And you have to be solid in who you are as a woman to be able to handle that and not take it personally, you know?
I want to come back and ask you about those looks. Sekou, what made you decide to do this?
Honestly, it was the rapport we had when we first started talking.
He did mention that. Just, he liked you a lot.
Man, we just vibed. Yeah. We had a long conversation the other day. We were cracking up on the phone. Yeah. Like, we known each other about 20 years.
That really was the impetus for it. But also, you know, I try to think down the road, and in part it was possibly for, you know, our unborn kids, or if they happen to be adopted, whatever the guy has planned.
Yeah.
For them to hear our story at this stage.
Yes.
Because when you become parents and your kids, you look different. Sometimes you look in the mirror, you probably are different.
Facts.
You know, like I said before, life is a journey. And so if you can tell your story at a certain time.
Yes.
You know, hopefully maybe it's of help to someone else, or it just memorializes my feelings for you that you can look back and see later. Mm. So that combination is the reason why.
And what you're not going to do is give me emotional.
I'm like, God, I can't.
Yeah, that boy said memorialize my feelings for you. You got to chill a little bit now. Like, I'm man, okay. All right, let me get myself together. Memorialize my feelings for you. You know how important that is? Because marriage comes with a lot of challenges. And sometimes you forget, we get amnesia that you used to love me at some point. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like sometimes we operate in such bitterness and hurt over some of the most trivial stuff. But there was a moment in our love story where you decided to put a ring on my finger and say, I want to spend the rest of my life, not the next 2 years, not the next 6 years, not the 7 years, because most marriages end in divorce around the 7 year mark, coined as the 7 year itch. I did a whole TED talk about it, but we don't premeditate that day, but we get amnesia that there was a moment where he bestowed upon you words of affirmation in front of the world and said, I love this woman, and ain't nothing no one can do about it. You know, we get amnesia about those moments. So I love when you said memorialize, and that's how that spoke to me, is that it just reminds us that whatever we're going through, let's go and pull this video up and watch it.
Yep.
You know, and let me remind you, and this is what we do, and this is, the Bible is God's love story to us. And when we go look at it and we read it, God is reminding us, remember, I said this to you. I said, no weapon formed against you shall prosper, and every tongue that rises up against you shall be condemned. For this is your inheritance, because you're a servant of me. This is my love story to you. You know, what I had joined together, let no man put asunder. These beautiful vows that God wrote to us in the Bible that reminds us of his love and that he's married to us. And so when I hear you say that, that's why speaking to me on the depths, to the depths of my heart, because I'm going, that's what love is really about. That's how we get to till death do we part, you know, and it's something that's very rare. You want to say something, Maddie?
Oh no, I'm just listening to you. I'm just trying to.
This little part right here, this thing called this tear duct is acting up right now. Yeah. This little tear duct is acting up. Yeah. When you talked about the stares, when you talked about the judgmental looks, explain that. What are some of the worst things that you've experienced and y'all have experienced on this love journey?
To be honest with you, it really hasn't. I mean, you know, stupid people at a restaurant that kind of do the once over.
Yeah.
And like, that doesn't really make me uncomfortable. It says way more about them than it does about us.
Facts.
And really no one has said anything snarky to me. At least not to my face.
Yeah.
So, but just the looks of people, and it's uncomfortable for 2.5 seconds, but then, like I said, it says more about them than it does about us.
Facts.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mostly the looks.
Yeah.
I also sometimes carry myself around, like, say something, you know, like, the thing is, I'll meet you in your eyes.
Right.
If you're looking.
Action. That's facts.
I'll meet you in your eyes. It says, you know, I see you looking. What are you thinking?
Yes. It is.
But weaponized
in his eyes.
He charging people up, looking at him like, what? Say something.
please say it.
But it's so your eyes speak the truth of what, you know.
Yeah, it's a window to your soul.
That's right. And so it's mostly the look. Sometimes I've learned that they're moving down here in the South in Texas, there's little subtle questions that can be asked. But I navigate those well, in that I read them, and then I kind of brushed them off in a few, thinking a few things. One, you don't know me. You don't know her. You don't know our relationship. If you actually knew our relationship, you would probably support it.
Yeah.
Because it's a very honest relationship.
That's what I love. And that's what I want the takeaway for this. Like, as I was setting up for this interview, I was like, what do I want the takeaway? I want the takeaway to be where people go, I rock with them. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how you gonna get mad at that? Like, I rock with them. And if you have anything negative to say, keep it to yourself. Because at the end of the day, this is what love is. That's why I asked Rihanna, my technical director, I said, what's this episode be called? Moments before y'all came in. She said, The Color of Love.
I love that.
And I was like, deal. I had directed a play years ago by my friend Teresa Wash. She runs the Bishop Arts Theater Company right there in the Bishop Arts District. And I directed a play years ago called The Color of Love. Mm-hmm. And so when she said that, I was like, I directed a play called that before. Perfect. That's perfect. What it'd be. Yeah. I grew up in a predominantly white church. Okay. I grew up in the Assemblies of God. First Assembly of God in Mesquite. The only black family in the whole church. And so I grew up, I lived in the hood, poor, all black neighborhood, but then I went to an all white church. And so for 16 years, my whole experience of white people weren't negative. It was the most positive. Some of my best friends were white and they took care of me. I would get their hand-me-down. They would give me like their hand-me-down Jordans and whatnot that they wore a couple of times. Like, I don't like these shoes. And I'd be like, can I?
I'll take them.
One of my friends gave me these Jordans. He wore a size smaller than me, and mm-hmm. I squeezed my little foot in there. I was walking around, feet hurting like a mug. I said, I got my first pair, curled up like a mug. I said, I got my first pair of Jordans. You know what I'm saying? And so it was a really cool thing. So I always had a cool experience around white people. And so when I started seeing the stuff like the Black Lives Matter and all that mm-hmm. stuff, then it really gave me a different viewpoint, because you would hear a lot of people be like, it was almost like this racial divide that we went through. How did y'all manage going through that as an interracial couple, going through Black Lives Matter, the protests and all that good stuff?
You want to go? I'll start. I mean, it was real.
Yeah.
Now.
It was crazy because, well, we had a moment. I have to interject just 1 second. We had a moment where we like looked at each other and we were like, this is crazy that we've already had this conversation. Because if we hadn't, I don't know. It was just weird that like we had the conversation and then literally like 3 months later, it was all before everyone's eyes. And we were like, well, have fun the rest of the world because we've already been through it. Thank you.
Okay. What conversation y'all had? What was this?
So this was in January of 2020. And we had been dating for a few months. It was probably like 4 at that time. And to be honest, I mean, I never told her this, but I'll tell her now. It was just like, damn, I'm really into this woman. Like, just, I can't deny that. I really am. Was holding me back from going all the way in. And it was what we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
My nieces, my sisters, my cousins. And that was how the conversation started. Because we were sitting on the floor of my apartment. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I said, you know, I mean, I'm in a fortunate position as a person, period. Then as a black man to be where I'm at, especially with the organization that I'm with. And I know that without necessarily me being my intention, I know that there's probably certain people that may look up to me.
Yep.
I didn't necessarily want to focus on the public. I wanted to focus on the people that were closest to me. But I was aware of other people may look up to me. And it was this, how would they feel if they see me starting a family with a woman who's white?
Yep.
And we literally sat there and I said, I told her that concerns me.
That's good.
Because I don't want them to feel less. I don't want my niece to ask the question, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
That, I don't know if I could curse, but that, it hurts.
Yeah.
The thought of that. If I could see one of my nieces asking that question. Because I love them unconditionally.
Yeah.
And I think they are so beautiful. And I want to do everything to bring out that beauty. Mm. And I still will. And so that was the impetus of the conversation that happened back in January. And to tell a woman, you kind of started feeling maybe uncertain. is one of those moments where you think she might walk away, yeah, especially when everything is going good. Because in the beginning, everybody's on the best behavior, you know, and it's nothing but fun, right? Yeah. And you're really starting to go, oh, check that box, check that box. And then suddenly they hit you with something that cannot be changed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's something you are born with. The only thing that's wrong is just how society views it, but it's who you are.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be changed. It shouldn't be changed. It's, yeah, who you are. And so I had to, it was a real, for me, it was a real tough conversation for that reason. Also, too, she knew, and we grew into this, and she knew it already, but I'm not changing my blackness. And I told her I was a black man. I experienced everything a black man experienced, yeah, and that's not being taken away.
Yeah.
Right. And I'll continue to go through the world like that. And our kids will be black. Yep. So this blackness is real.
Yeah.
And so we need to see how we're going to do when we talk about these things.
Yes.
Yeah. And to her credit, she never ran. She didn't. Like when I said, I don't know, I am concerned, I'm not sure. Right. She didn't run. No. She stood there and she stood there. In fact, we ended up getting closer because of the talk that we had going through. And she admitted things that she just couldn't understand because it wasn't her experience.
Which is good. Right? But you can admit that I just don't understand it. Teach me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me see.
Learn, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we're all on the journey of learning. You know, mm-hmm, what I'm saying? It's like, I ain't never been black before. I ain't going to act like I have. So right. What do y'all go through? Exactly. You know, so when a cop stops you, you actually physically get nervous, psychologically, mm-hmm, get nervous. I've never experienced that. Teach me. And that's what it's about.
And you know, what's important in the response that she had, which is why I was like, okay, now my heart can open up more, is people will deny you that experience if they don't understand it.
Yes.
And that will be the complete, I will say goodbye, right?
Yeah.
But she didn't, right? Because somebody would say, well, I don't get that. Well, maybe it was because of this.
Maybe
it's because
of you. Maybe this. Right? Well, maybe, or if you didn't have you.
Right. Right?
Or yeah. This. Or maybe you were, maybe those feelings aren't valid.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
That didn't occur.
Yeah.
And so the fact that she showed me respect, right? She showed me respect first, and she allowed me to express how I felt and my experiences and took them at face value.
Good. Maddie.
Yes.
What made you take that approach? Was this the first black guy you ever dated?
No, I dated one in high school.
And so did you?
But I'm 33 now. So it'd been like a long time.
A long time. Yeah. And so with the world shaping and changing and evolving and racial tension coming to the forefront, how did you feel a part of that? Like what role did you take when you had this tough conversation with him?
I wouldn't necessarily call it, well, I guess you could call it a role, but I just wanted to listen. I just wanted to soak it in and listen. There were times where I guess we can kind of laugh about it now. And I'm like, sometimes I would listen to what he says and then I would turn it in, and white people do this. They make it about themselves.
Yeah.
And they get all emotional and they're like, well, I just don't understand it. And I would do that. And it was gross. And I didn't sit with the being uncomfortable for like 5 minutes and just, yeah, let my body go through that. Yeah. Oh, I have this like habit of wanting to, but I don't get it. I'm so sorry. Like you start apologizing. And I had to tell myself, like, this isn't about you, woman. Like, just sit down, sit back and just listen.
Good.
So I guess my role was the listener, the supportive partner, just being supportive and listening and not judging and not taking it personally.
How'd your friends respond to y'all's courtship?
They were, honestly, they were just happy that someone was treating me the way that a woman should be treated.
Isn't that what it's really about? Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy? Because it's like what you really want is somebody just to treat you right. Yeah.
Treat you right, you know? So there was no comment of, oh, but he's black. Like there was none of that, because I think they know that I would not speak to them again. So if they said it, they didn't say it to my face. Like that's just not going to fly with me. It is what it is. But yeah, they were just happy that I met someone that treated me with respect, and he leads with love. We talk about that a lot. He
lead with love.
We lead with love. And that's something that I have to remind myself daily, you know, lead with love. Don't lead with your ego first. You got to lead with love.
What is something that you would want the viewers to take away from y'all's love story?
That's a good question. Being vulnerable is important, and I would want people to take away that, well, first of all, don't settle ever.
Facts.
Don't be with someone who makes you feel like you need to change and like transform into someone else completely in order to please their ego and who they are as a human.
Yeah.
You find someone, like he said, who meets you whole. You're both two whole humans. You come together and you make something beautiful.
Right.
So that's what I would want people to take away from this is just, you know, wait for the person who accepts you for who you are.
Say cool.
Let love light the way.
Oh. Yeah.
Let love light the way. Don't deny yourself an opportunity. Don't deny yourself a blessing that God has presented to you for fear of what someone else may think. You will be protected as long as you stand in that space. The moment you doubt it is the moment you will possibly lose it. So hold your faith in it, that was what was presented for you.
Mm.
And honestly, people, there will be some people who end up respecting you more for it.
Yeah.
Those who won't, they just decided they won't, and that's fine. But you will find yourself in a much better, a happier place when you just allow the blessing to come to you, let love light the way, and march forward.
Lord. Sometimes you got to just settle when Sekou talks. You just want to just sit back and be like, yes.
Do you know that's what my friends say about him?
What? They just,
because he's a man of not a whole lot of words,
yeah.
But they literally say, when Sekou talks, I just want to stop and really make sure I'm paying attention to what he's saying, because it's always good. It's like nuggets that you need to put in your pocket.
I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Like I'm at a spoken word spot.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's not just because he's on a podcast either.
This is how
breakfast is. Are we making coffee? And I'm like, hold on, let me go get my pen and paper so I can write down what you just said.
I would be remiss if I didn't drop this. How did he propose to you?
Oh, God. Ooh. Do you have 3 hours?
Yeah, right.
It takes me forever to tell the story. But
how many minutes I got?
10 minutes. Okay, right. I can do it in 10. Do you want to do it or you want me to do it? Because you're better.
Give the cliff ping notes pong version. Off of it.
Okay, cliff
do
notes.
Ping pong. We'll do the ping
yeah.
pong.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, how do I even start? It was in December. Well, first of all, we had had a discussion about moving in together earlier on in our relationship. And I had never lived with a man before. And I stood firm in my thinking that I did not want to live with a man until I was married. Just because I had been hurt so many times in the past and I had had an idea about how it was going to go and then it didn't go that way. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that to myself again. So then the world shut down and we both lived in separate places. And as our leases came to an end, we had another conversation. He was like, so what are your thoughts on moving in together? And I was like, you know, because his mom had always told you, you know, you should live with someone.
She said you should live with somebody before you get married.
And it's true, you should.
When mom speaks,
you listen.
It's true.
Me and him had that conversation. We had a little debate about that. I said, what? What'd your mama say? They said, that's what she told me. I said, it's interesting.
Continue. Right. It's interesting, right? And my mom was trying to give me the respect as a grown woman. Like, you make the decision. I'm not going to step in and say no. I'm not going to say you should. I'm going to let you make the decision. And I, you know, so... We moved in together on December 5th, which was a Saturday, and he had to do it all because I was working all morning. And so he moved us all into the to our new place. And then Sunday, the next day, he proposed. So I didn't live with the man without a ring on my finger for, I was like less than 24 hours.
When he told me that, I was like, boy.
I know.
I was like, man.
I know.
Backstory that. Now, why did you do that? Why did you propose?
Whatever, or that way?
Yeah, that way, that day, given the fact about her, because what you said was something that really was honoring her and how you were telling me that story. So why did you propose to her that day?
Well, one, I wanted to surprise her.
He did that.
I wanted to surprise her. I knew she wouldn't think the day after we move. But and I guess being honest, I had already proposed to her in my head multiple times.
So there you go. See, there you go. You plant. You over. Okay.
I melt every day. And that's what I'm like. At least 5 times a day.
He said, if I'm being honest, I've already proposed to her several times in my head.
This part, I'm like, let me just go and get it over with.
Let me just go and do it. Let me go and realize this thing. And so, because it was cool because you had said that she had originally told you her those principles. I will not live with a guy XYZ. And then when you told me, when she said that she was willing, you was like, that's it. That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to honor you in your decision and his decisions. Like, y'all, it was a win-win for both of y'all in that. And I was just like, man, that's all right. You know what I'm saying? It's like when certain stuff happen, that's why I said my mind is open to stuff now. Because at first I'd be like, nah, you don't do, I'm not living with a woman. I'm not going to do that. I'm not such, 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 such. But then the way he orchestrated it was like, oh, okay. That's y'all love story. That worked for y'all.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. And it wasn't some long engagement. Be like, yeah, I proposed to you, but we'll get married in about 20, 28, right. 20, 30. You know what I'm saying? You know, hey, let's not rush anything. You know, we doing well right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't that foolishness going on that he's been the man and saying, I'm just not going to let that ring be something that's cute on your finger. I'm going to put a covenant behind it. So shout out to you, King.
Appreciate
shout
it.
Out to you, Queen. Thank Heavenly you. Father, I thank you right now for this amazing dynamic couple. I pray that you cover them from the crown of their head to the soles of their feet. Protect them. Lord, you said in your word, what you had joined together, let no man put asunder. We come against every lie, every ill-intentioned thought that tries to come against this dynamic couple, that tries to destroy them. We rebuke that. We cancel the assignment. Lord, I lift up Maddie's health right now in the name of Jesus. Touch her body. Lord, you said in your word that by your stripes she is healed. So I speak healing over her right now in the name of Jesus. Let her body regulate and line up with you right now in the name of Jesus. Let them have a dynamic, fabulous ceremony, God. But God, I want you to infuse yourself in those vows, God, and begin to cover them and put a force field around the relationship and protect them. Lord, I even speak to their unborn children, God, that you raise them up to be mighty men and women of God, Lord. We thank you right now in the name of Jesus for all that you're going to do. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Are y'all active on social media?
Yes.
She is, I'm
not. You're not. So how can people follow you, Maddie?
At the Maddie Claire on Instagram.
The Maddie Claire. Mm-hmm. And is it a waste of time for people to follow you?
Yeah, don't even look for me.
True. But I post enough about him. They can follow him
he
through
said,
my
don't
Instagram.
Even look for me. But listen, y'all give it up. Y'all give it up for my new homies, Maddie and Sekou.
Ladarian, thrusted suddenly into Child Protective Services in 2015. My nephew, black, a boy. The likelihood of being adopted outside of kinship, slim to none. Armani, 16 years old, black, a boy, with 5 years in the foster care system before I even knew his name. The likelihood of ever being adopted, yep, you guessed it, slim to none. While Ladarian and Armani were trying to survive and barely thrive in an overpopulated and underfunded foster care system, I was living my own life, doing well professionally. Having been a single father with a daughter who at that point was doing well in college, it was my time to live my life, right? Wrong. I felt unsettled, tireless, agitated. There are just too many of our black children stuck in ambiguity and in the limbo of the foster care system. In 2017, I legally adopted my nephew, Ladarian. Fast forward to 2019, I had no ties to this other young king, but I felt God instructed me to adopt him also, and I obeyed. Starting over with parenting should have been enough, right? Working with various foster care and adoption agencies to help bring awareness to the countless young black kings in the foster care system should have decreased my agitation, right? joining the board of directors of Advantage Adoption, an organization that helps find permanent adoptive homes for children in foster care, should have led to some type of resolve, right? No, not at all. None of it felt like I had done enough. I now realize that every one of those experiences was laying the fundamental foundation for my life's mission, Kingdom Royale. Kingdom Royale will be a luxury state-of-the-art home for foster boys. Our first location will be in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. We will utilize the whole person approach that instills identity, empowers them to advocate for themselves, and enlightens them regarding new perspectives and limitless options that they thought were impossible. Though the young kings will attend the local public schools that are in proximity to Kingdom Royale, our at-home curriculum will broaden their worldview through participating in the arts, attending various cultural events, learning about and engaging in multifaceted discussions about current events and even relevant historical contexts, introducing them to gardening and landscaping and even caring for our animals on our farm and on-site stables. We just launched our startup capital campaign with the goal of raising $2.8 million. Now, why $2.8 million? Well, in 2017, I created a web series in which I performed random acts of kindness for targeting the homeless community. One of the most notable successes was that one of the videos went viral, garnering 28 million views. However, one of my biggest regrets is that I didn't raise a single dollar to help in implementing a more sustainable plan for the homeless community. So throughout the years, with much remorse, I reflected on not maximizing that moment. I knew if at that time, just 10% of the viewers donated $1, we would have raised at least $2.8 million that could have really established long-term support for the homeless community, or at least started a long-term initiative to do so. This is my do-over. This is our new beginning. Together, we can attack this at the root by specifically helping our homeless Black boys who are already disproportionately represented in the American foster care system. I'm LaTerrace R. Whitfield. I've been nominated for 3 regional Emmys documenting my work with the homeless as well as my personal adoption journey. Despite those accolades, the greatest award for me is truly providing the infrastructure for a transformed life. Visit KingdomRoyale.com for more details. Crown a king and make a donation today.
Let me tell you something. I am so happy that I opened my mind up and removed all biases to actually talk to this couple. Man, Sekou and Maddie, man, they are a dope couple. And I mean, I posted a picture of them on my Instagram stories the day they left the studio. And I had some followers that was like, I thought you only focus on Black love. And I said, well, you know, though this is my personal journey as I discover and uncover and recover love, I like gleaning information and just taking a sneak peek into other people's relationships because I find value in love stories, and those that have gotten it wrong, I find value in that as well. And so hopefully you are able to keep your mind open. Those of you who, if you're at this part of the podcast, that means you actually watched it. So salute to you. Salute to you for opening up your mind and allowing yourself to be challenged if you have ideals where you're triggered when you see a Black man with a white woman, then hopefully this gave you a different perspective, because it definitely did that for me. So hopefully you guys were blessed by the overflow of my journey. Well, here's my favorite part of the podcast as I speak to my beautiful queen. Dear future wifey, let's be a unified front at all costs. Let's protect each other's hearts and minds and prioritize the other. I love hearing about couples who defy the odds and operate with the audacity of hope. I love couples who withstand the test of times and choose each other when the world seeks the demise of their love journeys. I love when couples stand 20 toes down and fight impending negativity as a united front. Come for me, you're coming for both. That will be us. You will be my peace. I will be your safety. We will be a manifested promise for each other. We will be connected by purpose. I can't wait to say I love you with an intense stare. Your future hubby. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Dear Future Wifey podcast. Remember, be lit, live intentionally and transparently, and don't stop loving. Make sure to subscribe to our Dear Future Wifey YouTube channel. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We welcome your support. Simply share our podcast with your friends and family.